Welcome back to another episode of Write Up Your Algae. Sadly, we have come to the end of the summer months. It was such a great August, but it's now September, and we're back in school. But as the nice, bright summer ends, and there is less light, some unusual organisms have been appearing. On August 24th, 2024, Jacinth Béliveau was out for a stroll when she came across what she thought was a piece of plastic. However, on closer inspection, she discovered that it was in fact not plastic, but a rare blue frog.
Wow. Where was this?
In Oxford, Nova Scotia.
Ooh.
Yeah. We have not covered frogs yet on the podcast, so I want to take a few moments to review the frog's life cycle and how frogs use color in their environment. Frogs are amphibians, and there are over 300 genera of frogs. The organisms that were the precursor to the frog and amphibians and the predecessor to the lobed fin fish evolved in the Devonian 350 to 370 million years ago. However, the earliest modern-day frog was found in Arizona and dates back 190 million years ago, which would have been during the Jurassic period. I found various sources, but currently in Canada, we have an estimated 24 species of frogs, although five of these are technically toads, and toads have shorter legs, more warts on their skins, and unwebbed feet. But the classifications to me seem kind of murky on the difference between frogs and toads.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the same family, but they do have distinct differences. So I'm going to name them all, and also the toads, but this is only because I found it on the Canadian Encyclopedia, and they were like, these are the frog species, and some of them were toads, and I was like, well. But anyways, these include the American bullfrog, American toad, boreal chorus frog, Canadian toad, coastal tailed frog, Columbia spotted frog, Cope's gray tree frog, Fowler's toad, gray tree frog, Great Basin spadefoot, Great Plains toad, green frog, minx frog, Northern leopard frog, northern red-legged frog, Oregon spotted frog, Pacific tree frog, pickerel frog, plains spadefoot, Rocky Mountain-tailed frog, spring peeper, western chorus frog, western toad, and wood frog. So lots of different fun little species. And who knows, maybe later in another episode we can talk about a different one, but today we're going to be focusing on the green frog. In Nova Scotia, however, we only have eight species, and these would be the American bullfrog, American toad, green frog, minx frog, northern leopard frog, pickerel frog, spring peeper, and wood frog. Frogs are defined as tetrapods, and they have the basic body plan of such. Frogs tend to have shorter heads with little to no necks. They have short bodies, but these bodies are longer than what a toad's body would be. They have two front legs and four toes on their two front legs, and on their rear legs they have five toes. And these toes in the rear are generally webbed. How the toes are webbed depends on the proximity to water. So in some cases, those who spend more time closer to water will have more webbing on their feet compared to their counterparts who spend more time on land, and they'll have less webbing on their feet. Their back legs are specialized to help them jump, whereas toads' legs are shorter and they hop and walk, so they don't jump like a frog would. And frogs don't tend to have tails as adults, but as we all know, the tadpoles have tails, and then through their process of becoming an adult, they lose and reabsorb that tail. Another notable trait is that frogs can hear fairly well. However, they do not have external ears like us. Instead, they have an inner ear, which is covered by a thin membrane, which can be thicker or thinner depending on the frog species. The inner ear is also located behind the eyes. As we discussed in a previous episode, these organisms are sexually dimorphic. Emily, do you want to remind the listeners what that means?
So sexual dimorphism is when the female and male of the species have, I guess, a dramatic difference in either size or, like, in the case of things like birds of paradise, it maybe isn't necessarily size, but it's like coloration. It's just like a big difference between the males and the females of the species.
Yeah, and it's kind of how you can tell them apart based on sex.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of frogs, it can be a bit difficult to determine what sex the frog is when it's not breeding season. However, during breeding season, females tend to be larger than males, and they don't make the warning crone noise that males do. And males tend to be smaller than females. They develop a darkened coloration under their throats, and they have rough thumbs. They develop these rough thumb pads. With female frogs, you can also see their eggs. Like, when you flip them over, you can see their eggs during the breeding season. Frogs can live in various ecosystems, including tropical areas, deserts, the Arctic tundra, and everywhere in between. Most, if not all, frogs begin their life cycle in the water, where their mothers lay their eggs. To breed, the male will go on the back of the female frog and releases sperm at the same time that the females release the eggs. So it's an external fertilization process. During the egg stage, the larvae begin to develop. The larvae have gills, which enable them to breathe underwater. These larvae will eventually metamorphose into their adult stage. Metamorphosis is a process where an organism undergoes extreme morphological and physiological changes. At the end of the metamorphic process, the organism's body plan will have significantly changed. For example, think of a caterpillar turning into a butterfly. During metamorphosis, frogs are highly vulnerable to environmental contaminants and changes. Frogs can also undergo metamorphosis at different times of the year, and this process happens at the end of the larval stage. The larval stage in frogs can last from a few days to many years. The adult frogs commonly return to the same pond to breed when they do end up breeding, and this can either be yearly or it can be more than 1 year. The diet of a larval frog is wide-ranging. It can differ from benthic organisms to algae to cannibalism. After their metamorphosis, the frogs develop lungs and they can now breathe on land. At this point in time, their diet also changes. As adults, they are carnivorous. Their diets can consist of insects, spiders, mice, and even snakes, and this is seen in the American bullfrog. Frogs are mostly nocturnal, meaning that they're generally more active during the nighttime. If you've ever seen photos of frogs, you've probably seen those really cool tropical frogs that are all different types of colors. Not only do they range in colors, but they can also range in the patterns on their skin. Green and brown frogs use their coloration for camouflage, where they can blend into their surroundings to hide from predators. Frogs can use their bright skin to warn predators that they're not worth eating, and this bright coloration signals that they are dangerous. So it can mean they're toxic, where there's a poisonous substance to other organisms that can harm them, or they're noxious, meaning they have an unpleasant smell or behavior. However, in the case of the blue frog found in Nova Scotia, it is actually a green frog that lacked yellow pigmentation. This process is known as exanthism and happens in some frog species. Exanthism is when an organism lacks the xanthophores responsible for the red and yellow pigmentations in the skin. In the absence of xanthophores, the skin appears blue. The current thought is that this can occur in about 1 out of every 290,000 frogs, although this is an estimate based on where there's a population of 2 million frogs and it's a bunch of different species, so it's not just like a green frog per se. But at local populations, this can occur in as many as 1 out of every 318 frogs, depending on the location. It is thought that this is a heritable trait within frogs, similar to albinism. This trait needs to be studied further to determine its actual effect on the organism. However, it is presumed that this trait is considered neutral or slightly disadvantageous. This summer alone, I could find 2 sightings of these blue frogs. One, which I had mentioned earlier in the episode, is from Oxford, Nova Scotia, and the other is from Chance Harbor, New Brunswick. There have not been many sightings of these blue frogs in Nova Scotia. In a CBC article, they said that for a while, at the Museum of Natural History, an American bullfrog named Tiffany, after the light blue of the Tiffany & Co. brand, was brought there after being found in Wallace Bay in Cumberland County, Nova Scotia. So although there have been a few sightings and a few of these blue frogs on record, there's not a whole lot in Nova Scotia. I wanted to end today's episode by talking about some of the threats to frogs. Frogs are an essential part of the ecosystem. They recycle nutrients, and they are a predator as well as prey. Yet frogs are at a significant risk all over the world. Amphibians are considered the second most threatened group on our planet, according to the IUCN. These threats can be local or widespread. One threat is habitat fragmentation. And I know we've discussed this before, but Emily, do you want to remind the audience what habitat fragmentation is?
This isn't going to be eloquent, but habitat fragmentation is basically when you have an intact habitat and say there's development, such as just the typical example, a highway, and it has immediately, you know, in a way, fragmented the habitat, but in doing that, it lowered the quality of the habitat because there's not able to be as much movement within the entire area of the habitat.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. So when we develop any type of land, we make it less accessible for the organisms in that area, and therefore it becomes less safe. If organisms need to cross a street or even a highway or even through a town, they face an increased risk of movement within that ecosystem. And so I know when I'm driving down the cabin highway at nighttime, especially because frogs and toads are mostly nocturnal, I'm running over a bunch of them. And that's just one easy example for me to remember the effects of habitat fragmentation, because you can see all the squish frogs and everything down some of those like country roads. Another source of habitat fragmentation is within wetlands. As we convert land, especially around or in our wetlands, we destroy essential habitats for many organisms, including prime breeding habitats for frogs. Other threats to frogs include pesticides, agricultural and industrial development, invasive plants and animals, which introduce competition, and infectious disease. As we discussed before, amphibians can be sensitive to environmental contaminants, especially during metamorphism. For example, a study done by Tyrone Hayes et al. In 2010 found that exposure to a common pesticide known as atrazine can alter the hormones and genitals of male frogs. In their research, they found that males who were exposed to atrazine experienced decreased testosterone, decreased mating behaviors and mating success, as well as feminization of genitalia. Threats including applying pesticides can significantly affect a frog's population. The risk of infectious disease is very apparent globally. Some diseases that impact the amphibian population are amphibian chytrid fungus, rhinovirus, and novel alveoli pathogens. Some diseases affecting amphibians have methods of prevention or can treat the disease, while others have no known cure. And with these three here, I didn't find any like information that would suggest there's a 100% positive way in dealing with these diseases, and these are like three very detrimental diseases that most of the time result in death. So it's important to be aware of these diseases, and if you're really interested in amphibians, it's a good thing to look up these diseases and know how they affect the populations. So that's all I have for today's episode, and I'm just going to go into a short little trivia. Emily, do you have any questions?
No questions, but how have we never done a frog episode yet?
I don't know. I was kind of looking at it, and I had gone to an orientation, and one of the professors had mentioned about this blue frog that was found. Mm. I just remember the comment and being like, blue frog in Nova Scotia? That seems weird. I thought blue frogs were only tropical, but turns out it's just a mutation that causes them to be blue.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I don't think I took a lot of pictures of frogs this summer, and I think I definitely filled up the company camera for sure. But I think I only saw four different species of frog this summer. I did manage to see the tree frog, but I can't believe there's eight. There's so many I haven't seen.
Yeah, but to me it seems like in all of Canada only 24 species of frogs.
Does feel really low.
And especially because five of them are actually toads.
I've definitely seen the toads.
Oh my gosh, so many toads. We'll have to do another episode about frogs because this was very interesting. I'd like to look more into the disease aspect because I just wanted to touch a little bit on their conservation because amphibians are super vulnerable to human disturbances. So it was interesting to learn a little bit more about them. Mm-hmm. Now on to everybody's favorite segment.
Trivia!
What is the term used to describe a poisonous organism that warns others with its coloration? Apposematism, Malarian mimicry, Batesian mimicry.
I don't know. I feel like I should know this, but I'm not recognizing either of them. Batesium mimicry? Is that what it was?
No, it was aposematism. So, sorry, Emily.
Aw.
So, aposematism is used when an organism is actually toxic and they have the coloration, that bright coloration of being toxic.
I guess it makes sense that it wouldn't be mimicry if they actually possessed those traits.
Yeah. Okay, what is a term used to describe when two or more harmful species look similar to deter predators? Automimicry, Mullerian mimicry, Batesian mimicry.
Batesian mimicry?
No.
Oh, one of these times, but I guess that it'll be right shortly.
So when two or more species look similar and both can have like these noxious traits of being unpleasant in some way to predators, they have the same coloration to avoid, like, if they had different coloration, then maybe a predator wouldn't know that both of them are toxic. So it's kind of like a warning sign. And they look so similar because they both have that toxic trait. Mm. Okay, now for the last one. What is the term used to describe when a species is palatable but takes on the coloration of an unpalatable organism?
Batesian mimicry.
Yes. Yes, and the other two options I had was crypsis, when they kind of hide. They have their coloration hide, so similar to camouflage. And then masquerading, which is when they look like an object.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Like a leaf bug.
Yeah. So that's all I have for trivia. And we hope this episode was
right up your algae.